And it often doesn't come from sitting politicians. So people are like mad at Chuck Schumer, mad at Hakeem Jeffries, or mad at, like, you should definitely be mad at all the politicians, and you should definitely like voice your displeasure. But political leadership actually comes from the people, and the politicians often respond to where the people move. And it's our job collectively to fight back, push back, be in opposition. Presidents aren't kings.
Welcome to our latest episode of Trailblaze, the show about the America we can be, the America we want to be. I'm your co-host, Nayara Huck.
Hey, Nayara, Jamal Simmons. I'm glad to be here with you again this week. I get to do this every week. This is so awesome.
It honestly is becoming an anchor point for my week because there is so much that is happening that we care about, and trying to sift through all of it to rise above the noise and like, hey, here's the thing that really matters. So I appreciate so much that you and I have this time together, and I appreciate that we have somebody new to join us today. He's the National Director of the Working Families Party, Maurice Mitchell. Thank you for joining us, Maurice.
So good to be here with you all.
Like clap emoji, clap emoji. You guys can't see it. Clap emoji. Good to see you, Maurice. All right.
So
Well,
part of
I'm excited to be here with Maurice. I think, like you said, this is going to be really a good show. One thing that just before we talk to Maurice directly, because I know you've got all kinds of questions about this, but there's so many things that are happening right now in the country. I mean, we're talking about Elon Musk and Doge interfering and all the parts of government. They're going into where our data is, they're going into the payment systems, they're going into Social Security. We've got literal quid pro quos happening with officials to figure out their legal status. It is like 1 month into Trump and the whole thing is falling apart. What is going on, Naira?
This whole idea of that we were built on trust and built on norms, and you and I have said this before, like you can't, once things have been broken and disrupted, you can't act like everything can just be put back together the same way. And there's an opportunity. There was an opportunity to put it back together differently. And well, Donald Trump got elected and picked this CEO monarch type dynamic that he wants to use instead of replacing instead of democracy. And the CEO monarch idea is something that's been gaining traction among all of these South Africans who are now running, billionaires and throughout the right-wing internet. And Maurice, I'll bring you in on this. What
Yeah.
does that idea do to this, what we've done until now, which is organize, around different ideas? We have elections as contests to hash out those ideas, and then we have rule of law. I mean, you are leading a political party in this moment. How do you deal with a CEO monarch?
Correct. Well, we're still far away from living in a CEO monarch reality, as much as they would want it to be so. They can't just will it to be so, right? And I
Ooh, a
think
dose of cold water on the conspiracy. I like it. That's good.
I mean, they're about that life, right? Like, don't get it twisted, but that's not where we're at. And actually, this is one of the things that right-wing authoritarians like to do. They project more power than they actually have, and they claim to have mandates that they haven't earned. And so Trump won a thin majority in the election. So he won the election outright for sure, but it was a small majority. But he's like pounding his chest and declaring that, this, like the last thing that he said was like, if the president makes the country better, then it's legal, right? All these things, they're designed, I think, to kind of get us into this posture where we assume he can do these things, even though it's against the laws, unconstitutional, whatever. And so, as somebody who organizes, what I tell folks is like, don't acquiesce. Don't just assume that he could do it because he says so. Like, actually, it's our job to remind people that presidents aren't kings, that power is diffuse in this country, and also their hubris, their overreach, them being drunk on their own power is actually their downfall. Right-wing authoritarian regimes, whenever they fall, it's because they've gone too far, way further than their mandate, even further than what their followers would want them to do. So, I don't remember a lot of people voting because they wanted Elon Musk and a bunch of teenagers to be futzing around Treasury. Like, I don't remember people saying that.
And so you're right.
When these things happen, and also when people feel the pain because these things happen, both people who didn't vote for him as well as his supporters, that's going to change how comfortable people are with him, you know, pounding his chest and pretending to be the CEO monarch. And so as somebody that is an organizer and is interested in defeating them eventually and interested in what a new democracy could look like, I actually encourage their hubris, because I know in that space, there's regular people that are going to wake up to the fact like, oh, this is a billionaire grift. Mm-hmm. They actually aren't real populists. They don't care about the price of groceries or the price of eggs, or they don't care about my family. They just care about their own power. And so I encourage the hubris, because that gives us opportunities to build with people.
Yeah. You know, I think somebody on our show recently said, you know, a well executed, a bad plan well executed fails faster than, you know, a good plan. So listen, as I watch this, I am struck by part of the decision-making matrix that I often use, which is, what are the fundamentals, right? If you hire good people and you have a good plan and you're trying to do good things, you have a high likelihood of good outcomes, right? But what we're watching is them hiring bad people to do bad things with a plan that doesn't seem to be put together very well. And in fact, I wonder if perhaps that there's some need to, you know, in private enterprise, you go out, you break things quickly, figure out what's broken, fix the stuff you can, and keep moving, that kind of thing. That's the tech model. But in public life, I think it may be different, because the scrutiny is so much higher. And in fact, they may be trying to boil the frog too fast, right? They're doing too many things too fast, and people are going to get hurt in a way that they notice. And when that happens, there's no telling what happens next.
I want to throw in here this idea that they're going to cut Medicaid. That's in the latest congressional Republican proposal, by $880 million. One third of the American public is on some kind of government assistance. And I still remember back in the day of Obamacare, when people were saying, keep government out my Medicare. When you have Steve Bannon saying a lot of MAGA rely on Medicare for their livelihood, don't touch it. Yeah, you might have boiled the frog too quickly.
Oh, absolutely. And you know, all of this federal aid, you know, it's you know, a fact that red states, Republican states, actually benefit more from federal aid than quote-unquote blue states, right? That in a lot of rural communities, their public schools depend on federal aid, right? Because, you know, a lot of these states don't have a vibrant tax base in order to support their county schools that they depend on, right? So when everyday people, including some folks who voted for Trump for all types of reasons, recognize what's happening and feel that pain, there's going to be a reaction. I saw online there was a farmer based in Missouri who was a Trump voter, who said, like, I can't access resources from the Inflation Reduction Act. And that my whole livelihood is dependent on that. And because of the decision of this administration, I and my farm and a lot of other farmers, many of whom voted for Trump, we are imperiled. More and more and more people are going to feel that. More of those stories are going to build up. Medicaid, Medicare, SNAP, Head Start. People across identity, people across political identity need those things. And a lot of those things actually lean towards a lot of his supporters in a number of quote unquote Trump countries. So when that hits, and it's already beginning to hit, and the more that it hits, I think that that's going to change the political calculus. And we're going to see wedges between Trump and Musk, who, you know, I mean, if you look at the chaotic way that he handled his sort of taking over of Twitter and turning that into a complete mess, he's basically applying those same practices to government. And, you know, it's interesting that there's this idea that, like, oh, we need politicians that treat the country like a business. Actually, no.
Yeah.
That's a very Reagan right? That's the rest of Reagan project.
Yeah. And it's funny, because everybody who really has been involved in government knows you really can't treat government like a business. It's exactly supposed to be, in some ways, like the opposite of it. In a market system, there are market failures, right? There are things the market will not do. You can't get resources to do those things. Those are the things you want to have done more broadly. In a previous life, I worked a lot on broadband. And one of the things about telecommunications and broadband is we've all decided that access to telephones back in the day and now access to the internet is a public good. And everybody, in order to participate in our society, needs to do it. You know what? It's not cost efficient to put telephones in a holler in West Virginia where only 35 people live. But we believe those 35 people need to have access. And so the government subsidizes access to those things. Any business would never do that without government support. And that's the kind of thing when you start to rip government out. Real people who are having real life needs won't get them tended to.
That's
it's
correct.
That idea that government is not about making a profit, or, you know, yes, it's using taxpayer dollars for public good. So you need people in government who actually care about people. Maurice, there's something you said about in response to the CEO monarch idea that the people will react and people will respond. Where are you getting this faith that the people will actually engage politically, given the last few years, right? You have people disenchanted in all different sectors of society.
You know, it's true that people are disenchanted in a lot of ways, understandably, and are fed up with the institutions, are frustrated with the powers that be. That's true. But also, like, I'll just give you one data point. We are doing phone banks because we're having people call into their representatives' offices, right? We've never had to do this. We've capped the phone bank. We can't include any more people. We've run out of lists, right? You know, so to me, that shows that people are noticing, people are disturbed. People didn't vote for this, right? Whatever they were voting for, they weren't voting for this. And there is a palpable energy to get involved and not just like, I don't think people, you know, there's some people who do care about these institutions and want to preserve democracy in an abstract way. But there are people who recognize that, wait, Elon Musk is like, has access to my, Elon Musk and his random teenagers have access to my social security number. They're messing around with my data. They're messing around with our money. They're making it harder for us to draw down and access really important resources. And so it's hitting home. It's not just an abstract thing for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like, I live in the same working class neighborhood I grew up in. Sometimes I take the train home, I bump into people I went to high school with, and they know what I do, and I'm getting the earful from people. So that's given me a sense that this is not going to go the way that maybe Trump, MAGA, Project 2025, that crew planned, that there will be an opposition. And I use the word opposition on purpose because, you know, Trump number one had a resistance. I think we need an opposition movement. Opposition seek to eventually win. Right.
Yeah.
And so I think there's going to be momentum. I think, you know, they have very slim majorities in the House of Representatives and, you know, they have not proven that they have the discipline to govern. When they had a majorities last government, they weren't able to pass anything, and they couldn't even keep a speaker, right? So it's going to be interesting to see if they could hold on to their majorities to pass their bills. And when they want to pass all of these Medicare and Medicaid cuts and cuts to school lunches and cuts to programs for people in order for billionaires or multimillionaires to get tax cuts, we know that that's not very popular. And so if you are a Republican sitting member of Congress in a quote unquote purple district, in a district that requires you to be able to convince at least some independents and some Democrats that you should stay in office, it's going to be interesting to see what they do and if they're willing to imperil their political future for Trump and Elon Musk.
I want to ask you a question about fear. Because one of the things I'm noticing in this moment is this very distinct whiff of fear that's out there. I have a friend whose brother was at USAID in a developing country, and I'm being non-specific on purpose. Mm-hmm. They were in a developing country. the government had made all these obligations to local staff, the U.S. government. The U.S. government AID program had made a lot of obligations to local vendors. All that got cut off abruptly at the last moment. They were afraid that this person was going to be taken by the authorities because for non-payment, right? Like the government owed all this money. The people wanted to know how they're going to get their money. They had to scurry this person out of the country kind of surreptitiously to keep him from being upset. And so my friend told me about it only under the condition that I would not use her brother's name or the country it was because they were afraid of retaliation, you know, by the government for doing it. At the same time, I know somebody else who's got a local NGO, and that local NGO had its had its funding cut off because when they did the funding stop, they don't have their money to act. And then lastly, we see United States senators, right? Joni Ernst, who says she's a victim of sexual assault, who had been a military combat veteran, vote for Pete Hegseth, right? Who says women shouldn't be in the military and has been accused of sexual assault. She votes for him in the end. We see medical doctors who go after RFK Jr. one day for being anti-vaccine and then voting for him to be HHS, Human Health and Human Services Secretary. It's just the intimidation and the fear factor. How do we combat that as a people who want to stand up for opposition?
Yeah, the one thing I'll say is that unfortunately, elected officials and sitting politicians tend not to be the greatest exemplars of
courage.
This is all about expectations. We shouldn't expect people courage, to do things morality, that they're not.
You know, ethics.
I think my therapist told me that once. don't expect people to do things that are not their natural
in my experience. But the good news is, at least the good ones know how to go outside and be able to know what the political weather is and where the political winds are. And so that's the job of all of us, right? Mm-hmm. We could actually change the political climate, and we've seen the political climate change dramatically, right? I was around, I was alive in 2020 when we were all sheltering in place. And a lot of us would not go outside, but then something miraculous happened. The whole country came together in horror after George Floyd was murdered, and 10% of the country hit the streets.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know, like that happened in our lifetime, right?
That's right. That's right.
So I remind people of this because public opinion could shift, culture could shift, the political climate could shift very, very, very rapidly. And it often doesn't come from sitting politicians. So people are like mad at Chuck Schumer, mad at, Hakeem Jeffries, or mad at, like, you should definitely be mad at all the politicians, and you should definitely like voice your displeasure. But political leadership actually comes from the people, and the politicians often respond to where the people move. And it's our job collectively to fight back, push back, be in opposition, and do all the things from calling your elected official to there's a lot of protests going on, which we shouldn't just hit the streets, but that is one form of opposition. And from DC to other places, President's Day, there were a bunch that was great. To, you know, at the WFP, we recruit everyday people to run for office. And like I said before, presidents aren't kings. Power is very diffuse in this country. So we need to get people who have that fighting spirit onto school boards, onto city councils, into state legislatures, right? And if you are feeling and seeing that there should be an opposition, then you should be asking yourself, like, what can I do? Like, put yourself not simply in the space of being a sort of like simply an observer, and wondering, like, why aren't they doing, like, actually get involved and do that thing? And there's so many different ways that you could do that, you know, by joining an organization and by finding your lane.
And Naira has a question. I'll tell you, I very often, really quickly, I very often would find myself thinking, you know what, somebody ought to say something about, and I'm like, oh, wait a minute. I'm somebody. I can say something. And then I have to do it.
Right. I mean, literally, we show up every Tuesday and we're like, okay, we're going to say something. But Maurice, I know we got to let you go. And I appreciate that you joined us today and reminded folks that this is about community engagement and renewing these connections that we just kind of expected, you know, for a while that somebody else might take care of this stuff. And running for office, especially all these folks who are getting impacted directly, is a great way to solve the problem. Thank you, Maurice. Folks, we've been talking. This is Maurice Mitchell, the National Director of the Working Families Party.
It's good to be with you all.
Jamal, I was really struck by how Maurice was dismissing this expectation about Democratic leaders being a true opposition, right? The Chuck Schumer, Hakeem Jeffries. And I found it kind of refreshing because when I saw some aged Democratic senators walking up to federal buildings and, you know, the doors got closed on them and they were turned away, I'm like, what kind of old school practices are these where you march on the building and then what? Suddenly you show that you had no power? Like, this is all about power dynamics. So I found that very refreshing. And this idea that there is a broader opposition movement that can't rely on entrenched elected people to lead it.
That's right. It can't rely on those folks to lead it because, and technically, like, their job is to follow, right? Like, the job of a politician is to figure out what the public wants and then try to go help them get what the public wants. Now, from time to time, they will lead on something. And this is a moment where I think we do need people to lead, but they may not, that may not be coming from political leaders. Now, what they can do, here's what frustrates me, because what they can do is their organizing principles, right? Like, they are the hub of the infrastructure of the left in many ways. And so what's frustrating a lot of people is what you said, right? We have these old school dynamics, tactics, but Trump is dominating all the new school ways that we're communicating. So we should be having more information that goes out online. We should be distributing information, not just about what's happening at a federal level, but boil it down. What's happening in states? How many people got laid off in Connecticut? How many people got laid off in Arizona or Pennsylvania? Give that to those members. Give that to Democrats who are on site and let the people in those states arm them so that they can mount the resistance or the opposition that people are looking for.
And that's the challenge, right? When people looking at the Democratic Party and, you know, the new chairperson, I mean, listen, these are all institutions that raise money to help the people who are already have access to power or stay in power. The information networks.
Oh, you're so cynical. Oh, look at you. You're so cynical.
The you're right. You and I both worked in these institutions. You don't primary a sitting member of Congress or a sitting senator. That is a rule of the political parties. They're not going to get rid of people who've already been there. That is, if you want that type of change, that has to come from the outside. What's interesting about the Working Families Party is that they are they're a registered political party, and they will often co-list people in places like Minnesota and places like New York. They'll co-list a Democrat and a Working Families Party member. So as you know, one of those third party, they don't challenge as much as they bring support for new ideas and new individuals to come forward, unlike the Green Party. Throw that in there.
Yes. Look, because at the end of the day, this is going to have to be a coalition, right? This is going to have to be a bunch of people who agree with each other, maybe 70% of the time, all getting together to agree to oppose the people they disagree with 70 or 80% of the time. And so, you know, what I'm looking around and I see what's happening inside of these government agencies, and I think you do need to have people on the streets. We are going to have multi-layered opposition. There could be people on the streets, people speaking up in media, people online in digital spaces. We're going to have to contest this everywhere that it is. And then there's like the dangerous point of what happens when Trump tries to send the military to quell that protest. And that's a problem that I think we're going to all have to wrestle with another day.
Well, a more immediate problem, for example, is the laying off and firing of people who worked at the FAA. Right. These are institutions that people tend to not think about because, you know, until you have planes turning over in the snow, planes crashing in rivers. I mean, this did not happen.
A plane crashed in West Philadelphia. Remember, I wouldn't even talk about that one anymore. Like a plane literally crashed in the streets of Philadelphia.
In the last month, we've had 3 American airline plane incidents. The crazy plane incidents, and yet Doge decides that they want to fire people at the FAA. So I think all of this is this story, we need to tell it, but people will understand this story, that there's a part of government that we never wanted to think about, and we just wanted it to do its thing, and we need to keep that part of government going. That's the part that the Elon Musks of the world want to destroy, and I think that will be their undoing.
So let's scare each other some more. The FAA is one place that obviously we're looking at and saying, I can't blame the crashes on Trump today, but I certainly can tell you what he's doing is not going to make it better. It's not going to fix it. We also have one of the reasons we don't have egg prices are so high and we don't have a lot of eggs in stores is because of the avian flu. There's a bird flu out there that's infecting chicken crops and is jumping into other species, including human beings who are now starting to show up with bird flu. But we cut 1,400 people from the Center for Disease Control. We're not listening or like looking out for these new diseases and trying to stop them in their tracks. And we already saw what it looked like when Donald Trump was in charge in a health crisis. It was not great. People were dying by even greater clips. So I do think that there are things we're going to have to do, the things that they should stop cutting. But at the same time, the Democrats have to be, not just the Democrats, the left, the opposition has to be for something. The American public wants change. And what we cannot do is always be the people who are the obstacles to change, because nobody likes the person who's just throwing, you know, things in the middle of the track to stop the other runners. You got to get a runner that's out there on that track too, that everybody can rally behind. And so I think we need new ideas for change to make sure that we're going to have a country that works for people.
I don't know. You probably could get away with right now. Just don't fuck it up. Like, that's a pretty compelling message right now. Because I'm going to throw it up. You topped my FAA with a pandemic. I'm going to top that with nuclear security disaster. Because they fired a bunch of people who literally sit there and do nuclear security monitoring for our nuclear arsenal. They're like, oops. They can't get a hold of them now. They don't know how to find them. They're like, well, we fired people, but we don't have their personnel files. So where do we find them to bring them back? Because, oops, we let Homer Simpson run all of this.
And we're just deleting, right? Literally, they're just deleting data, except for your financial data. They're not going to delete that. But they're deleting data for these employees. So they can't go out and find them to bring them back in order to tell them, like, we actually need you, right, to hold on to the nuclear secrets. Listen,
we don't need the leader. We don't need the new leader tomorrow. I feel like this is enough right now to just – in this moment, realize that people are getting hurt and those people are waking up to understanding that they can have power. They just have to choose to grab it.
But here's one. So let me just use this as an example. They're going to go after the Department of Education and they're challenging it. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of people have questions about the American education system. Is the American education system working for our kids, especially poor kids, especially kids who don't have all the best resources? So yes, we don't want the Department of Education to be gutted and everything to be just turned over to states to do what they want. But on the other hand, I'm not that interested in just defending the status quo of the American education system, particularly after the pandemic, where we know we've had so much learning loss and kids have to get back up to speed and move faster in order to learn. So what I would love to hear politicians talk about and people who are leaders on the left, not just politicians, is what do we have to do to fix American education? Not just what do we have to do to save the Department of Education and a bunch of bureaucrats with bureaucratic jobs. How do we fix American education for American kids? And let's talk about that and hold these guys to that standard and give people something to be excited about that I think they really know is a problem and they want to fix.
Well, the Department of Education is really a smokescreen and red herring for the states' rights issues. Ultimately, local boards of education determine curriculum. States determine curriculum, what your children are taught. The idea of a board of education was to use federal funding to make sure that a kid in Oklahoma and a kid in New York kind of know the same things and have the similar opportunities when they come out at the end of the day. That's the whole purpose of it. And that's that idea of nationalizing and having some kind of connectivity where there's scrutiny on standards, where there's some sense of obligation to maintain something is anathema to all of the folks who would prefer to homeschool, the folks who want Bible and religious study to be part of public education. So it is about education, and they're using Get Rid of Department of Education really as a smokescreen to fundamentally change what we are taught about American society and what we mean to each other. It's all part of a much larger project. So I'm with you. We don't need to defend the Department of Education and a bureaucracy. We need to defend this idea that there are certain standards and principles and access to information that children and citizens of America deserve to have.
That's right. We can all win together. This is the fundamental fault line between the left and the right, is that they believe, you know, it's like the old Mario Cuomo line, that the wagon train is moving. They believe you got to kick off the old people, kick off the infirm, kick off the people who look different than you in order for you and your family to make it. And we believe we can all make it together. It might move a little bit differently, but we can all win this race together if we just try. And I think they are going to lose because their idea is fundamentally wrong. And we have to have the confidence of our convictions that they are wrong and this is not going to work.
They're wrong and it's not going to work. That's your latest episode of Trailblaze here on Politicon. Make sure to subscribe, listen to us on your favorite streaming platform.
Thanks, Tara. See you next week.
Bye, Jamal.